Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Alami podcast, Change Your Company. My guest today is Daniel Marcos, who is an entrepreneur and a coach for leaders and entrepreneurs to build their own businesses. Daniel, you built your own business. You learned a lot from that experience, and then you went on to help a lot of leaders around the world to scale their businesses and to help them lead in a way so they can reach that goal, which is not only have a business, but business that grows and also reach and impact more people. So welcome to the Alami podcast.
Thank you, Wad. Thanks for the invitation.
And for me, it's like I'm curious to learn from you. What are some of the biggest lessons you learned on the journey of helping leaders scale their businesses?
So there's many things, but one of them, the main ones that I see is people complain the team is not on the same page and said, hey, everyone's not aligned. They're not on the same page. I don't know what to do. And I was like, okay, show me the page. And I said, what do you mean? And I was like, you want them to be on the same page? Show me the page. And they're like, well, but they kind of get stuck. So I said, if you want to have them on the same page, you have to have a page. You have to have a very clear strategy. So tell me your strategy. And they take half hour to explain the strategy to me. And I was like, I'm a heavy, highly capable strategy individual. I teach this. And it took you half hour to teach me. Imagine your employees. It's going to be really, really hard. And they just see one small silo of the business. They don't understand the rest. So you first have to put a very, very clear, simple strategy that everyone could understand. If you don't have that, you don't have nothing. Let's start there.
Honestly, this is extremely powerful. Like I never heard this before, and I think you nailed it there.
I'll give you an example on this. Yeah. I'm in a meeting with a CEO trying to kind of sell in my services. He's like, everyone knows exactly what they have to do. So I said, can I prove it to you? Yeah. So I go out the office on the corridor, and the first person walking, I grab him, put him in the office, and said, tell your boss what's the priority of the month. And people just get nervous and start kind of shaking and said, well, raise revenue and lower expenses. And I was like, we all know that. But what's a specific goal of the quarter or the month? No one knows. So it's really, really difficult to get a team if you're not able to at least verbalize it in a very simple, clear way. Mm. That's number one. Mm. Number two, you have an amazing team to do it. And here are many things that happen, but you don't want to pay good salaries. I see that often. You don't want to scale the team. If you don't scale them as people, as executives, how do you expect them to scale your company? You have the wrong people on the wrong seats. That happens all the time. So we say that if you don't have the right team, how can you execute the strategy correctly? And there we work in helping an alignment of first getting the right positions, then getting the right people for the position, then get them to do the right things, and then get them to do them right. So you have these four things that I think is like the column, the vertebral column of every company. You need to have the right positions first designed. So we do a functional org chart of the company. Mm-hmm. And then we do job scorecards of every position. So we could hire the right person with a very structured hiring process. Once you have the person, you have to give them the right priorities aligned to the business, going back to the strategy. And then they have to do them right. So it's a very difficult four thing that they have to be perfectly aligned. If they're perfectly aligned, it's like your spine is straight. You could run really fast. If your spine is all crooked and you're all on the side, it's going to be very difficult for you to scale a company. So amazing. That's what we do. Number three, cash. Growth sucks cash. Growth is like the oxygen, like the fuel of the company. And if you're stranded of cash, you will never be able to scale. And I see this often today with young millennials or young entrepreneurs, that they raise, let's say, $500,000 from angel investors, and they spend all the money getting to launch their app. And they launch their app, and they call me and said, like, it didn't went viral. And I was like, what were you expecting? Well, I just put it on the app store, and I thought it was going to go viral. And I was like, no, you just launched the app. Now you have to start the process of marketing it and getting traffic and the rest. I would, and they said, well, Riot already went all the money, all the 500,000 or whatever I raised, I finished it. So I don't have more money to put into marketing. And I was like, how can you do that? So growth sucks cash. You need to have cash to do and really put fire. And the fourth is execution. And that's being very, very disciplined in keeping the one thing, the one thing. I don't know if you remember Cities Leakers. It was a movie in the US. And this guy used to say, remember, we have to stay in the one thing. What's the most important thing? And as teams, whenever you're trying to grow, you try too many things. And they try 10, 15 different strategies. No, it's one. Figure out where you're going to bet, what you're going to do, and just do it right and be the best in the world. And keep that great execution. If you do those four things, the probability of you scaling is very, very high.
That's amazing. So the one thing, of course, when we talk about entrepreneurs, we know that entrepreneurs have a lot of creative ideas about different businesses. I mean, in a way, entrepreneurs, at least when they start the venture, they are like artists, right? They are passionate about their product or service. And some of them, they get a little bit distracted because they have a lot of ideas. But I also noticed that this is the case in the corporate world, in a way, that you have too many priorities. But in that case, it's for a different reason, which is like everyone wants to cover their back. So no one wants to shut down like one initiative. And then initiatives get stacked up in a way. That's why you end up like having 7, 8, 10, 12 priorities, which means there are no priorities. And
that's great.
And that it's a little bit like crazy. You know, I remember, I know one organization where, you know, one senior leader put up one slide about all the initiatives that are going on at the same time. And it looked like, I mean, no wonder we're not able to move forward. Like, you know, and some of these projects were like, it was so clear that they need to be shut down, but no one there to basically say like, okay, let's shut it down, because they were just worried that down the line, you know, someone will come back and say, why did you shut it down? And it's interesting. And again, it's a different dynamics, but it's leading to the same kind of conclusion in a way, like we're trying to do too much.
That's correct. The best entrepreneurs, they are very focused. They choose their battle and they said, hey, there's 15 things I need to do. This is the one I'm going to do. I'm going to say it in a very ugly way, but it will make a sense. You could not be sitting in two toilets at the same time. Just one. The best entrepreneurs have the discipline of being just one.
Yeah. So
the richest people in the world, Microsoft, how many companies did Bill Gates need to be so rich? One. Right? Amazon, how many companies he need? One. He put a lot of business units inside, but it was one company, one alignment. Right? So Warren Buffett, one. The most powerful people in the world, they do one thing very, 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 very well.
I have one example to challenge you on this one.
Please. Yeah. Of course there. So are there differences? Yes.
Yeah. There are exceptions.
The exceptions, of course. But the common denominator, it's one.
Yeah.
95% of the people that made that big wealth is just one.
I mean, so Elon Musk is maybe like an exception in a way that, you know, he's managed to.
In everything.
He's an exception. Yeah. But I mean, in a way, like he kind of, even his money, when he invested it initially, he invested it into these two different pools. And he didn't want to kind of focus on one. You know, like even though some people were telling him just focus on one, but it shows also how much, you know, he was passionate about it and he was committed to both of them at the same time. And for sure there are other factors which helped him. It was not only the passion and the commitment. Maybe like he had some teams who were like, you know, in a way like best fit, as you said. He had the role defined, etc. What advice do you have for leaders to kind of to pick that priority, you know?
So you need to stop to think. One of the things that we help our leaders or the people I help the most is every quarter, sit them down in a room just to think for one day a quarter.
Mm-hmm.
So out of the 90 days, they said, are you crazy? You're going to want me to think one day? And I was like, yeah, but if we think that one day and eliminate 8 things that you're not going to do, you're going to have a lot of time the rest of the quarter or the month. If you're not thinking, you're going to be doing 8 things. You will have no time. So we get our teams in a lot of discipline of strategic thinking. So as an example, whenever we go and do a planning session, everyone said, let's do strategic planning. I hate that term. I think it's a mistake. Let me kind of divide it. So if it's one day, I said in the morning, we're going to do strategic thinking. Just thinking, what do we need to do to be successful? I don't care how. I don't care the budget. I don't care how much. I don't care. I just need you to tell me what do you need to do to be successful. And then in the afternoon or the next day, we do execution planning. And we plan how we're going to execute what we decided in strategic thinking. So whenever you're strategic planning, what happens is you come into the meeting and say, hey, guys, our website is very ugly. We need to improve it. Okay. And everyone gets into the weeds on how to improve the website. And after 2 hours, we have a plan of how to improve the website. And then we have another idea, and then we go to plan it, and another idea. And by the end, you end up with this head with 5 snakes, all of them going in different places. And they're fighting budget against each other. It's a mess. So we said, let's first do strategic thinking and choose the 3 to 5 things we're going to do. And then after, we do execution planning to make sure they're done correctly. If you break that, the clarity on the team, it's crazy. When they come from that meeting, we hear this all the time, it's the most productive, most efficient meeting we've ever had. So we teach them how to think, and we give them a format to have their strategic thinking sessions. And when they come out, they're so aligned with so much clarity of what you need to do, that they could execute it really, really well the rest of the quarter.
Amazing. And are there some guidelines that you could, or tips you could give if some leaders want to do it on their own, like basically when it comes to, maybe you mentioned already like some of this point, but what kind of questions or?
All of what I told you is, or most of what I told you is based on the book by Vern Harnish called Scaling Up. Amazing book. I strongly, strongly recommend it. Scaling Up, written by Vern Harnish, founder of EO, very influential thought leader in the industry. I'm his partner. I've been partner for 15 years, and that's how I start teaching companies. I first did a company that was very successful. We scaled it to 1,200 employees, and then I did a second business. I did a mortgage bank, a bank to finance mortgages for undocumented Hispanics in the U.S. So we were the subprime of the subprime. There was no one more subprime than me. And when the 2007-2008 crisis came, I was destroyed. It was really, really hard. I had a company, 120 employees, offices, houses, everything. It was a big operation, and we had to shut down in a week. So after that, Vern called me, and I was depressed. I was in a really bad spot in my life. And Vern called me and said, hey, how are you? And I was like, well, I'm really bad. And I complained, and I blamed the world, and it was not in a good spot. And he said, okay, what's next? And I was like, I don't know. I need to get a job to pay for my kids' school. And he said, no, you have to become a coach. And I was like, no, I could never coach anyone else. Like, I don't even trust myself to be an entrepreneur. Now, how do you want me to coach someone else? And he said, that's precisely why. Because what you went was so painful and it was so hard, you have to make sure it does happen again.
Amazing. So
one of my clients tell me this, kind of as a joke, but with some seriousness in the back. He said, you're the most pessimistic entrepreneur I've ever dealt with. I'm like, yeah, but your business went under, or you've done 3 businesses and I've done 1 in 10 years. And my business is very successful. But I'm always trying to cover everything that could go wrong and be prepared. And things go wrong often. When things go wrong, my business doesn't go under. Most entrepreneurs, they're up to here with very little water, very little cash or options, and then something goes wrong and they just get eliminated. So what we do is that we help them be more efficient. So kind of let me make an analogy. People come to me and say, Daniel, I want to scale my company really fast. I'm going to do this strategy. And it's like you coming to me and said, hey, I have this boat and I'm going to buy this amazing engine. I'm going to raise $20 million from venture capital. It's this amazing engine and I'm going to put it on the boat. So I look at the boat and I was like, fine, but your boat is not very aerodynamic. It's all the painted is rusted. There's a lot of holes. There's water coming into the boat. And yes, you could buy a big engine, but your boat is not efficient. Let's make the boat very efficient. Let's cover all the holes, paint it nicely, make it more aerodynamic, get the water out, and then you could buy an engine to move it, right? So what we do is that. What Scaling Up does and what we do at the Growth Institute is help you have a more efficient boat. Once your boat is efficient, you could move it really, really fast. There's a lot of market. Just to give you a perspective, the world today is around $90 trillion, all the world economy. Mm. If you could not figure out how to make a couple of million in $90 trillion, we have a problem. There's a lot of opportunity in the world. Indeed, the biggest problem is that there's too much opportunity and you're trying to do 10 things at the same time as we start discussing on the podcast.
Yeah.
So I start teaching Scaling Up. And then what we did at Growth Institute said, hey, what are the methodologies and what are the books that go together with Scaling Up? And we start inviting other thought leaders. Today we have 150 faculty
teach
courses in Growth Institute around how to scale your company. And we teach you the tactics that you need, like how to hire people, how to fire people, how to run a meeting, how to negotiate KPIs with your employees. Like it sounds so simple, but very few leaders know how to negotiate KPIs with their team members. How to set priorities, how to run meetings, all the typical stuff that will make the operation be more efficient, have the whole of the boat be very aerodynamic so you could really move it fast in the market.
Mm. And in your experience, are there some cases where some of these entrepreneurs or leaders are not coachable, or it's basically they would not be able to make this shift? Do you face these situations, or it's rare?
So they hear you, and they say they want to be coachable, but once they start executing, they go back to their same habits, and they change the priorities that we have aligned, and they want to bring 10 more things into the mix. So I'll give you an example. The other day, we're coaching an entrepreneur, very, very successful real estate business owner. And when he started the year, there were 8 projects in the pipeline. And the team made plan for the 8 projects, financing, everything was set for 8 projects, right? And then by the end of the year, they have 13 projects going on. Because the owner, he's a very brilliant guy with great connections. And he sees all these opportunities and just buys more things and start doing more things. And then they're really, really mad that every project it's over budget and overextended in time, right? And I was like, of course, your team made a planning for 8. Now you have 13. Your team is struggling. So of course you're going to be out of budget and out of time. So what we decided, and this was after many hours of conversation, we said, when you start a year, we're going to start around 70 or 80% of capacity. The team is going to have 20 or 30% capacity for you to bring 2 more projects. That's it. You could just bring 2 more projects. And you could bring 2 more projects and the team will execute because they will have extra capacity and extra budget. But that's just 2. So when the business owner comes into the office, say, I got a new business. I just got breakfast with someone. It's a great opportunity. Blah, blah, blah. They're all excited. The CFO job is to sit the owner and say, hey, fine, you have 2 projects. If you like this project that much, we're going to use 1 of the 2. We just have 2. And the business owner thinks again. And say like, well, you know what? I really like it. Let's do it. Fine. And then they execute it because they have the capacity and budget. Mm. But at least getting to that agreement, it took us years of discussion or weeks of conversation with the CEO. And sometimes they end the project with 4 more projects or the year with 4 more projects. So keeping that discipline is very, very hard. And of course, the owner calls me and said, Daniel, what do you want me to do? This is an amazing project. It's a great opportunity. And I was like, you always have great opportunities. Like every year you have 10 great opportunities. So you have to be disciplined on which opportunities to get, which one don't get.
Yeah, you know, they use this metaphor in public speaking. I think maybe it's used also in other fields. You need to kill your babies, and which is the idea of, like, you know, a lot of ideas you are excited about, you just need to drop them, you know, to be able to keep moving things forward and be focused. So it's a challenge, especially, again, for creative people who usually have these ideas and this innovative project. So, but again,
And that what makes or separates a good entrepreneur from a great entrepreneur.
Mm.
The capacity to be able to execute that.
Mm. Yeah. What's the chances when you put them in that one day full day meeting, the strategic thinking and implementation? I mean, what are the chances of them sticking to this versus, like, you know, just going and then being distracted again?
So here's what I tell them at the beginning. So when they hire us to help them implement all this methodology, I said, I need a year to do it right.
Mm.
And they said, well, you could not do it in a quarter or in a month. And I was like, the first meeting, you're going to come out and said, you've done everything. Like, what else is to do? Because we have a one-page plan and we have a strategy and we have a plan for the quarter and the KPIs and everything set. And I said, yes, but there's a couple of problems. First, half of the information your team gave me is wrong. I don't know what part is wrong, but I know it's wrong. The only way to prove what it's wrong, we need to start living it. And in day-to-day operations, we're going to figure out what works, what doesn't work. But I could guarantee half of it is wrong. It always happens. And two, your team has no idea how to read a KPI and act on a KPI. So he said, what do you mean? And I was like, during the month or the quarter or the year, I'm going to start challenging your team. I said, hey, why is that KPI red? And they're going to say, I have no idea. Go and figure out why it's red. And they come back and said, now I know why it's red. And they explain why. I was like, great. What are you going to do different? I said, what do you mean? If your KPI is red, is not working or not going as planned, you have to change your plan. What are you going to do? And I have no idea. So we start having a conversation of what can you do to bring that KPI from red to green.
Mm.
That takes around a year for the team to figure out the right KPIs, understand to read them, and then understand how to change their strategy or the execution based on the KPI.
Mm.
That takes 3/4 to a year. So I could do it in a week, and you're going to see all the dashboards and KPIs everywhere in your office. They're going to be wrong, and they will not be able how to read them, and they will not be able how to act on them. So that's why we need a year to implement them. Right.
So in a way, you are changing habits, basically, and changing habits takes time. And that's why, I mean, you're not changing a habit of one person. You're changing a habit of full organization, and which that's means right. that you need to be observing it closely and adjusting until you are sure that actually, okay, the habits are changed, you know, like there are all the disciplines are there, and then we can basically, they can go on their own. But it's a little bit like you go on a boot camp, like you work out, you get like much better, and then you cannot rely on this of being fit for, you know, for a year or for life. You know, you need to keep going to the gym. And in order to build that habit of going to the gym, you need someone like basically helping you to build
that's
it.
Great.
You know?
Yeah, that's great. You don't go to the gym one day and you get really buff, right? You have to go every day to the gym for a half hour.
Same thing.
And you have to have the coach to keep you on track. And sometimes people said, I don't need a coach anymore. I already know my routine. And then 6 months later, they call you back and said, hey, I need some readjustments.
Yeah.
Back, readjust, and then we'll go out.
No, I think, look, we all need someone like outside to kind of give us perspectives and of course, in some cases, give us the expertise, because then we save time learning it on our own. But I always believe that when you have someone around you who lived it, who kind of done it, who went through the challenge and who is at a different level right now, this is the right of people, the kind of people you want to have and to help you, because they know what they are talking about. So I think what you shared, all these are very powerful because they are based on experience. What's one piece of advice we can leave? I mean, we're reaching the end of our conversation, even though it's like a lot of ideas that I would like to kind of explore more. But we can check, maybe if we can like have a follow-up to this conversation. But what's one piece of advice you could give leaders when they are scaling up or when they are this growth mode?
So what I think is most important is that you choose what you want. Mm. You could go through the world, you choosing what you want and then adapting the world to you. Or you could go through the world kind of adapting and just trying to be squeezed by the reality, by situation, by decisions of the rest. Usually we don't stand to think and really strategize and think what we want. So the one thing that we help entrepreneurs sit them down and get them to think. And by the way, I hear this all the time. So Daniel, I remember the day we decide to scale. We were in this room with you. You were challenging us to be a professional team, not an amateur team. We decided to scale, and now we're 10 times bigger. You have to decide what you want.
Amazing. That's great. Daniel, what kind of resource, if some of the listeners wants to know more or to get like more tips or insights, where they could go to?
So Growth Institute is my company, growthinstitute.com. Yeah. And we have a YouTube channel with a lot of free resources. And in Growth Institute, what we do is we usually want to have a conversation with a CEO, really understand where they are, where they stuck, what's not allowing them to sleep, and then figure out what's the best tool or methodology for them to implement and improve that. So give us a call. We'll be happy to have a one-on-one call with everyone and really understand where you are. We know that it's like going to the doctor and say, "Doctor, I'm sick." They're not going to give you one medicine. There's thousands.
Yeah. Medicines.
So we need to have a conversation and really understand the pains and where people are and where the companies are stuck to really help them get unstuck.
Amazing. Daniel, thank you so much for being with us today. The mission that you are on is very aligned with the purpose of this podcast, which is creating high-performing, inspiring workplaces. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Vlad.
And for all the listeners, thank you for being with us. And like always, stay inspired and make the biggest impact, not only within your area of responsibility, but beyond it. Bye.